So we're welcoming Mike Festa, State Director of AARP Massachusetts, to the program today to chat a little bit about how the pandemic is impacting the older folks here in Massachusetts, and in particular, how folks can stay connected during this time. Mike, very nice to meet you and to chat with you. Thank you for taking time.
Thank you, Joe. I very much appreciate this opportunity on behalf of AARP Massachusetts, but also just knowing that, as we had talked before this program started, about your longstanding commitment to the city of Quincy and doing this kind of programming. And clearly, you know, with the pandemic all around us, it implicates just about every aspect of our lives. I can assure the listening audience that one of the focused attentions of AARP is on the impact it's having on older adults in a number of ways. And as you allude to the point of this conversation, dealing with isolation. And frankly, isolation, social isolation, loneliness is a longstanding challenge for seniors, some seniors anyway, and the pandemic has obviously exacerbated the problem. And long after the pandemic is in our history, the challenge of isolation and how we engage people in community will continue. So it's an evergreen topic. It happens to be appropriately focused right now because of the pandemic.
Yeah, I'm hoping, you know, this is one of the silver linings that comes out of this crisis, is that there is more focus and attention paid to this particular issue, and maybe some progress being made to, you know, to help resolve some of the problems that folks are having. Have you seen it become an issue particularly?
Definitely. In fact, I let me share with you a couple of things. First of all, in our work at AARP, you know, we're an advocacy organization. We're a social mission organization, at least our work. My job as state director, along with my staff and many, many volunteers, is to promote older adults. I was thinking older workers. Yes, that's one of the areas. We're very concerned about older workers. And again, another impact of pandemic is most definitely the challenge that older workers are going to face trying to re-engage in the economy. And but we are doing a lot of things in community. And so AARP, you know, we lobby at the State House, we lobby federally. A lot of people, I think, are aware of that. I have nothing to do with the products and services, you know, the insurance, all that stuff is done by others within the major organization that's run pretty much out of Washington. But for us in Massachusetts, we have been working very closely over many, many years with the Executive Office of Elder Affairs, with the Mass Councils on Aging, the Senior Action Council, with the Mass Home Care groups. And what I would describe it as, you know, we're a pretty hearty bunch of people who know each other, work together, focus on a number of issues affecting people 50 plus. And one of the areas of interest for all of these organizations is addressing the challenge around loneliness and social isolation, and how do we deal with it. So with that in mind, as a background, I will tell you that our state president, Sandra Harris, who lives in the South End, she has been chairing a task force on loneliness and actually it's community engagement. It's recognizing the loneliness, but also encouraging engagement. And it's been made up of all these players, all these organizations that have been looking to figure out what are the ways that communities have done a good job in including people in feeling that they're not, well, first of all, feeling that they are part of the community, but also recognizing that, you know, people are... have all kinds of personalities. I mean, I think we know people who say, I'm perfectly happy. In fact, this social isolation from the pandemic, nothing's changed in my life. Well, okay, fine. But the vast majority of folks, you know, obviously like social interaction. Right. And, you know, one of the things we were talking also off camera about Quincy committed to becoming one of the age-friendly communities. They applaud Mayor Hogan and the city council and a lot of community leaders in recognizing that as part of being an age-friendly community, isolation, social engagement, community, and civic participation in particular are elements of what an age-friendly community looks like. And so how do we get information out to seniors? Mm. Now, for example, Joe, this program you do, I'm sure you appreciate that a lot of seniors enjoy cable. It's a good source of information, certainly a good source of local information.
Right.
And what we always challenge communities to think about is, you know, recognize that probably one of the top three concerns that people have in communities, and this is, by the way, based on surveys done by UMass Gerontology. We've worked with them in communities as we've looked at age-friendly work. One of the top three concerns is people don't know what's going on around them. They feel, you know, they weren't aware, for example, they could apply for SNAP to get food security benefits. They weren't aware that there was a senior tax benefit as a homeowner. They, right. you know, the credits for income tax that Massachusetts has for seniors, et cetera. And so the first order of business, of course, is let's make sure that the medium for communicating that information is robust. So it's cable, it's the local newspaper, it's the officials communicating, you know, both in writing, by, you know, phone calls. Now Facebook is more and more Twitter. Sure. And I think all of that speaks to the question of whether, as people live their lives in Quincy, you know, are they feeling connected? Do they really feel that what's happening around them is something, number one, they want to participate in if they choose to,
right.
but also just generally as a quality of life matter, it keeps them more connected. So this task force has been actively engaged in planning what is now about to be a series of regional listening sessions that we're going to be doing in the Berkshires, in Worcester, in Boston, in the South, in Barnstable, actually for the Cape and the mm-hmm. South Shore area. And its purpose is to bring together councils on aging directors, citizen activists, providers of these kinds of programs and services that keep people engaged, and share that information and be sure that we're, you know, frankly, learning from each other. Because one of the things I've noticed in my work is that you can go out to some of these places, you know, that have 800 people, and you, because they have a great council on aging head, or they have a great town manager, the interest of this area in this area is acute, and all of a sudden you see they've got great programs at their council on aging. They've got or the senior center or life center or whatever it may be called,
mm-hmm.
or they're doing things that, you know, frankly need to be shared. So part of this task force is getting those regional meetings done. We've got a series of them coming up in the next month, but long term, I would say the challenge is, how do we take advantage of that information and get it into communities so that they can actually use those ideas and frankly, you know, plagiarize. I think that's one of the great compliments of plagiarism is, yeah, hey, if it's why reinvent it when you get something good going.
Yeah. Here in Quincy, we have a very active senior center. It's called the Kennedy Center. There's thousands of members, actually, and the director, Tom Clasby, is very interactive and engaged. So how important is it to have a location like that, an actual, you know, brick-and-mortar facility dedicated to these services you're talking about?
Well, I think it's essential, actually. You know, they take many forms. Communities, I think of Salem that comes to mind. They call it a life center. It's a mm-hmm. community center which has a clear emphasis on programming for people 50 plus, but also the veterans services officers there, the youth commissions there, a number of city departments are there. And so the activities are just running the gamut. Mm-hmm. And this is also part of, I think, you know, sensible ways of intergenerational engagement, mm-hmm. by the way, right? I mean, when I think of a good, a senior living arrangement, to have a daycare nearby, to have a playground or a elementary school nearby is just another way for older people to feel that they're still part of the community. And, yes. You know, whether they are seeing their own grandchildren or even have own grandchildren, yeah. Most people enjoy the company or certainly watching and maybe engaging with younger people. So
that's a great point. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah,
don't segregate them, don't lock them away, you know, embrace them.
Well, that's right. That's right. And I think that by osmosis and otherwise, being that close proximity gives them a sense that, again, that they have something to offer. And, you know, when I think of programming too, I believe Quincy did this, but, you know, that effort to document the verbal histories of the Greatest Generation veterans, for example, you know, just sitting down with someone who might have been in Iwo Jima, might have been involved in the Battle of the Bulge, and having a conversation with them and having that shared in the community with younger people in particular, is very powerful. And that to me is another example of how, you know, when we think about kids and they're reading about World War II, well, you know, that's fine and good. But if you can actually meet a veteran or you can listen from a pre-recorded program of that nature, it brings history alive. It connects them better to their own parents and grandparents, you know, most likely grandparents. Right. So again, I think that you've mentioned Quincy's senior center. I would say that the common denominator is understanding, and this is very true with AARP as well, that there are a lot of generations within 50 plus too. Mm-hmm. You know, there are.
You're looking at one of them, Mike.
Right, yeah. Here. Well, I'm firmly ensconced in the 50 plus generation too. But here's my thought on that subject. When you're thinking about programming a senior center, you've got to capture people our age, right? You, Joe, you're younger than I am, but let's just say we're not interested in bingo. We're not interested in some things that, you know, the 80 plus folks still enjoy. Right. And you've got to have opportunities for them to have more passive recreational opportunities. Yes. But the Zumba and the Mahjong and, you know, whatever else may be involved. I know Quincy has a very big Asian population.
Yep.
And there's a lot of cultural opportunities there, both in terms of food, in terms of programming, et cetera. So I think a good senior center is reflective of the community needs and recognizing that within the 50 plus, there are literally three generations of older people. And the name of the game here is recognizing and respecting that people's interests are different.
Yep.
And so I would say on the subject of isolation, this is the other thing that I always get a hoot out of. I'll never forget my favorite anecdote. I was in the bank teed up to go to the teller, and right beside me was this sweet lady. She must have been at least 89, 90 years old, and someone I've known for years in my city of Melrose, where I live in. I said to her, I said, hey, did you hear Mabel? Do you know they're having this really great program down at the senior center today on, and I don't even think, I think it might have been on introducing, it was a Greatest Generation person.
Okay.
And she looked at me and she says, Michael, that's for old people. I'm not interested. You know, it's like, oh, okay. And so it reminds us that we ourselves can be the biggest barrier to, you know, frankly, not just senior center stuff, but generally it goes back to the whole question of what social isolation. You know, there is an element of personality that says that that's not necessarily a bad thing. But I spend a lot of time in my job advocating, for example, on home care and keeping people at home as long as possible. Mm-hmm. But in the back of my mind, I also think that there are people who are living at home. That's good, but they are very lonely. They are not feeling that they are part of the community. And that's the soft underbelly of people saying, oh, I want to stay at home as long as I can. I don't want to go to a nursing home. Well, that's fine. But, you know, there are all kinds of senior living arrangements where there are others around you that will, you know, frankly, get you in a better place emotionally, et cetera, et cetera. So we've got to, as we think about programming, as we think about housing, as we think about, you know, civic engagement, all of this impacts and is intended to impact people where they're living and where their state of mind is. And if we can make more and more opportunities for them to feel connected then I think we're better off as a community, which is why we so much promote this in our age-friendly work.
Sure. What I'd like you to talk about maybe is during this particular crisis time, right, when these resources aren't available, maybe some suggestions for folks to stay connected one way or another.
Right. Well, we're doing it right now. It's called Zoom.
Yeah.
You know, virtual stuff is the way of the future. And I know, look, I have a mom who's 91. Mm-hmm. She's living in in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. It's an assisted living now, and they have this great, you know, a great Zoom program, which allows, by the way, right now, literally, she can't, you know, go to the dining room, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, and certainly I can't visit her. My brothers and our families can't visit her. So Zoom is giving her in her room a chance to watch programs, you know, this. You know, they'll have a piano player, they'll have some kind of a theater program, they'll have all these things happening, and people at least can use that TV monitor, mm-hmm, or computer monitor as a way of actually participating, observing, whatever. So I think that, you know, one of the things we've advocated in our legislative agenda, we're very concerned about nursing homes and assisted livings and access, understanding, first of all, what's happening in those places.
Right.
There was it took a long time for the administration to acknowledge the importance, not just of how many people were dying in those places and how many COVID-19 positives there were, but naming the individual facilities.
Right.
Was not happening. And we have been fighting very hard to, with the House Chairwoman of Elder Affairs, Ruth Balzer from Newton, mm-hmm, has got a bill that expands transparency around reporting and frankly allows anybody to get on the public health website to find out what's happening in the Quincy, you know, X place, how many incidents are there, God forbid, have there been deaths,
right,
et cetera. And I think that empowering people to know what's happening in these facilities, especially when the barriers understandably have to be put up,
right,
where you're not allowing interactions, all of that is critical. So in the end, Joe, I think we know that, I don't want to use that expression, new normal, all I just did. We have to recognize that there are many ways that we can engage in community. We can break down the barriers of isolation and loneliness. And some of it is the newfound tools like Zoom, you know, like Skype or mm-hmm, whatever else you may use, mm-hmm, Facebook, mm-hmm, Facebook Live, etc.
Yeah.
All of these are mediums for allowing people, especially those with disabilities that, or say mobility challenges.
Yes.
So let's make a silk purse out of a sow's ear, the old expression goes. And I think taking advantage of the challenges we face may very well bring us more chances to engage people and break down those barriers, you know, regardless of whether there's a pandemic around us.
One of the, obviously, one of the realizations to come out of this crisis is an inordinate number of sickness and death in the nursing homes and assisted living facilities.
Well, over, I think 65% as we speak.
Yeah.
Of the deaths in Massachusetts are in nursing homes.
There need to be more state intervention, regulation.
I think if you know, 2020 hindsight, right?
Yeah.
One of the things I recall very distinctly, I'm sure you do and your listeners do, the immediate reaction on the medical side was, we've got to shore up our hospitals. We need the ventilators. We need the PPEs. We need to, you know, frankly, make sure that our hospitals are ready for the surge. But it wasn't at the same time happening in nursing homes. The level of focus on that petri dish, I'll call it that. You know, these are isolated areas. There's a small community. If it gets in there, we know what happened in Holyoke and even in Chelsea. It breaks our heart. I mean, here we are, Memorial Day weekend. You think about our veterans, how many of them were literally trapped in an environment where they had nowhere to go and not enough equipment and not enough staff. I mean, a lot of staff were not coming in because they themselves were fearful or mm-hmm, may have had COVID-19 themselves. So I'm afraid as we look back, one of the lessons that we need to learn is that we need to pay more attention to the support that nursing homes have. There, you know, I can tell you as an advocate in this space, you know, we are very worried about the condition, financial condition of many nursing homes. Many of them have been closing, certainly as a result of this pandemic. I think the financial frailty of these places in some cases are very suspect. And we will find that not many, but certainly a number of them will be closing because their margins aren't there and they can't afford to stay open. So a constant focus on understanding that population, understanding the resources that are made available, and realizing too that, you know, even though, as I said before, you know, people want to stay at home longer, generally speaking, if you ask a poll, how many of you want to live in a nursing home when you're old, you ain't going to get a hand raised. You know, sure. You're just not going to, it's just the nature of that. Right. However, there is a pocket of people who are so frail that their medical conditions or their ability to ambulate, et cetera, or the dementia, Alzheimer's, and their memory loss is such that they can't stay safe home. Right. And a lot of challenges that families face is to be able to safely take care of a loved one in a non-medical setting. So in the end, the bottom line is there is a necessary niche within any community, any society, of having that skilled nursing facility viable. Mm-hmm. But obviously, you know, this tragedy in part has put a spotlight on the vulnerability of older people as a result of this flu, this particular COVID-19 flu.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things I suggested to a state representative that I talked to earlier this week was possibly utilize some of the field hospitals to thin out the population in the nursing homes, you know, to allow that physical separation. And he agreed, you
right.
know, that should be looked at in the future. Helpful if we'd have to learn this again, but in the
yeah. Quincy reps, Mariano Ayers, let me see, who else? My friend from... North Quincy, what's his, hold on, I'm going to be mad, I'm mad that I can't remember his name.
We have Tacky Chan.
Tacky Chan, that's exactly what I was thinking of. I love Tacky. When I was in the House of Representatives for 5 terms, and Tacky was a staffer for the Government Regs Committee, that's how I first met him.
Oh,
love
okay.
the guy. Anyway, yeah. He'll be mad at me if he sees the show and I forgot his name, but yeah, you've got a great delegation in Quincy. Suffice sure. to say, I mean, that's a good point. There are opportunities to think more creatively about how we do our work. Certainly, providing housing options for seniors is critical. And I think when it comes to the two soldiers' homes, the ones in Holyoke and Chelsea, a lot more attention has to be paid
sure.
to their resources. And post-pandemic, a lot of soul searching and a lot of change needs to happen.
Sure. I was wondering if you could provide some thoughts, Mike, for folks, what kind of actions they could take to help the people in their family who may be isolated.
Well, one thing I do want to point out is that we have a website at ARP, arp.org/MA, okay. and that's our Massachusetts website. And we have a lot of material, a lot of information about pretty much anything that affects people 50 plus, you know, if you're interested in volunteering, if you're interested in advocacy, if you're interested in this issue, if you're mm-hmm. interested in age friendly, if you want answers around COVID-19, for example, we have a huge array of information. And so just getting on the website, might be a good entree into learning that world.
Okay.
But I would say the other thing is that, I have noticed that in my city of Melrose that more and more people are stepping up and wanting to volunteer.
Okay.
Part of this could be their, it's altruism in the first order, but yeah. it's also getting antsy, wanting to feel like they're doing something while mm-hmm. they're not able to go back to work. Some of them, of course, are in essential jobs and they must be working. But there are a good number of folks who I think have spent this time thinking about how they can be more involved in their community. So this is, again, one of the silver linings in the pandemic is I think communities have been brought together. And I would encourage people to, not just for AIP, but they're, the Quincy Senior Center, without knowing the details, I bet there's no doubt that many of the programs are either put on by volunteers
yes.
or they rely heavily on volunteers.
Very
and
much so.
So suffice yeah. to say, look to your own community mm-hmm. and look to those kinds of places like your senior centers, like the cable programs. There are all kinds of ways to give back. And I also have to say, I think when we ask the question of what makes ourselves feel like we're contributing, it's a focused attention on what makes you happy too. This is a two-way street.
Yep.
I was telling you off camera before that I had been doing a gardening cable show for years because I like to show off my garden. I've got one of these Italian meets Japanese garden, with fish ponds and grape arbors and all this other stuff. And I generally love welcoming people into that. So it's a way to sort of share a passion. And I think a lot of people have passions and interests that are very much worth sharing. So again, it's one of the ways to give back that is enjoyable. And it's something that I think we know in these times, especially, that we ought to make that effort because people appreciate it.
For an older person watching who is feeling lonely, isolated, what is your message to them?
Well, I think the first thing they should do is, frankly, call their Council on Aging. I mean, I am a great supporter of Councils on Aging because they're first of all, most of the members of the council itself, I'm saying Senior Center is the building, but the Council on Aging are the volunteers. Mm-hmm. They are mostly people 50 plus themselves. Mm-hmm. They are your best chance to get real about what's going on and what they may want to be involved with. So I always point to the local place to go. And I strongly advise that in folks in Quincy, just go right to the senior center, pick up the phone, shoot an email, call Joe. I bet you'll be able to connect with somebody.
We can absolutely do that. No question.
Yeah. I just think that, sometimes the problem with government or bigger organizations, even AARP, is we think of ourselves and we are in many ways a national organization.
Sure.
But we recognize our members live in a community. We've got almost 800,000 members just in Massachusetts. So what I have been doing and my staff and the volunteers are doing is spending more and more time on age-friendly work and community-based activities. Mm-hmm. Now more and more required to be virtual, but ultimately we'll get through this and we'll see ourselves more physically, present. But that's what it's all about. I mean, national organizations bringing their resources to community is the way AARP is doing its business more and more. And I think, again, it's always good to look around your neighborhood to find out, and writ large, to find out where I can connect.
Sure.
So that's my best advice.
I think it's great advice. And we're happy here at QATV to help connect folks to where they need to be. Any last thoughts, Mike?
Well, only that I think every day we wake up hoping that this pandemic is going to be in our rearview mirror as soon as possible. We there's a lot of anxiety out there. I know that, even though the statistics tell us that this is an unlikely serious illness for most people, the simple truth is that this is a very uncertain time and it's very undermining. And I my best wish for people is to do whatever you can to stay connected to family and stay connected to your community. We've been talking about this subject today, empowering you and getting you through emotionally these very challenging times starts with friends, family, and community. So do what you can to break through the angst and break through the loneliness and, stay connected. That's what I would say. And Godspeed and stay safe and stay well. That's my other message.
Great. Well, I appreciate your time, and hopefully maybe we can do this in person again in the future.
I look forward to that, Joe. I always love to go down crossing the bridge, being in Melrose. On occasion, I will venture south of Boston. And if I do, Quincy would be a great stop. Happy to do it.
Thank you.
All right, Joe.
Be well.
Have a great day, folks.
Thank you. You too. Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.